Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 163, recorded July 1st, 2010, The Legacy Problem. Windows Weekly is brought to you by GoToAssist Express. If you're in tech support, solve problems fast with a leader in remote support software. GoToAssist Express. For a free 30-day trial, visit GoToAssist.com/Windows. And by Astaro, makers of the Astaro Security Gateway. Call 1-877-4-ASTARO to schedule a free trial of the Astaro Security Gateway appliance in your business. And by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/windows. Time for Windows Weekly, the show that covers all the things you need to know about Microsoft and their amazing world-dominating strategy. Here he is, ladies and gentlemen, hiding out in Durango, Colorado, in his Western-themed atelier, the editor-in-chief.
I think this is where people go when they're on that
witness protection program. You bet. Just look around you.
Yeah. There's a lot of people like that here.
If you don't see the guy in the witness protection program, it's you. Paul is the editor-in-chief of the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. He's also the news editor at Windows IT Pro, the author of Windows 7 Secrets, and he is working right now on Windows Phone Secrets, one of which is that there ain't going to be no kin. You didn't have a kin chapter, did you?
By the way, no. In fact, this was one of the debates I had, and I literally was working on the book when you buzzed me, by the way.
Oh, that's good. That's a good sign. That's progress.
Yeah, it is progress. So I had little tidbits about kin in the book here and there. And now those are going to have to be tossed. But I did not have any dedicated kin section, which in hindsight was a good idea.
Yeah, no kidding. So before we get into that, because it's got to be the story of the week. You are not, as anybody watching the video can see.
At home, yeah.
Yeah, at home. In fact, I think you seem to be in somebody else's... There's a lizard.
There's a lizard on the lampshade.
That's why my immediate guess was that you were in Tucson, but you are not.
No, I am in Colorado.
Colorado, where all the streets are named Arapaho.
Is that what you said? I think every town in Colorado has an Arapaho street.
Really? Was that the local Indian nation?
Yeah, I would imagine.
Yeah, I think so, the Arapahos. I remember that from a John Wayne movie I once saw.
Yeah.
So what brings you to... I think we talked last week. You drove with your dad, didn't you?
Yeah, I drove. So it was, 2,300 miles. We drove about 12 hours a day. Yeah, except the first day I drove by myself down to Pennsylvania, about 6 hours. And then, 3 days to get here.
Wow. And that was okay? How was that?
It was great. It was a good time.
I think that's a good thing to do.
We listened to an audiobook. I think you would appreciate that.
Oh, yeah? What'd you listen to?
The Alan First book that we talked about.
Excellent.
Last week.
Good. Yeah. Well, I'd like to get your review of that because I'm an Alan First fan.
It's very good, although I'm not sure what's going to happen next now because we never finished it, and I don't know how. I mean, I'm going to have to. I have it. I mean, I own it myself, but I'm going to have to somehow get it to him so he can listen to the rest of it. But yeah, it was good. And the funny thing is, I actually brought a kin with me.
Did you?
And someone has to have one, I guess. And I took some. The pictures this thing takes and the video it takes are actually very high quality.
Oh, see, that's good to know.
Yeah. In fact, side by side with the iPhone, the differences are astonishing. It's like looking at the difference between a camera phone and a real camera.
Not the new iPhone, the old iPhone.
Right.
Yeah, the new iPhone actually is spectacular.
Yeah. No, I'm sure it is. Yeah. That was one of the reasons I was originally hoping to get it, because I was hoping I could replace my camera with it.
Right. Yeah, it's good enough, I think, to do that. Now, here's a question for you. Mm-hmm. Should I get a kin? I mean, the prices are pretty...
The prices have never been lower.
It's a penny right now on Amazon.com.
Is it really?
Yeah. But you have to get a service plan. That's the Kin 1. It's aptly named Kin 1 for 1 cent.
But yeah. I wonder if the Kin 2 is 2 cents. But we should... let's hold off on the Kin stuff, I guess, until later, because I have some things around that I want to discuss.
Okay,
I
mean, good. No, you're in charge. This is your show. I'm just along for the ride. That's why I'm wearing Denny Terrio's shirt. And I have the Something About Mary hairdo going on here, too.
Oh, that's nice. And I think as the show progresses, that thing will actually wrap right around, and then you'll never be able to get
out of here. I have a curl. You know. I don't know what the curl nice. The curl came from. It's kind of a life of its own. I don't understand.
You're like the Gerber baby.
I look
that's
like
that. Look like, you know?
Well, as my head gets rounder, my face gets doughier. I think I could be the Gerber baby.
The ravages of age.
Well, it's true that I will be eating strained peas any day now.
Sure. Circle of life.
Yeah. Circle of life. And I told my son he's going to be wiping my butt. He didn't like that at all.
Yeah. I sure.
So I know what you want to talk about because I'm looking at your script.
Yes.
This leak came out. I saw it in Mary Jo Foley's column on ZD. Windows 8, some Italian guy... It had a slide deck that had all sorts of information about Windows 8 in it. Is it real? Is it genuine?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's not just a slide deck. There's a bunch of documentation. And I think the important thing to remember is that we're still far enough ahead in the game, if you understand the schedule, to know that a lot of this stuff might not happen.
We've seen it all with Longhorn.
Well, except that with Longhorn, they talked about it. You know, this time it was leaked out by mistake. This is exactly the type of thing that Microsoft doesn't want to see happen because... You know, the new mantra over there with Steven Sinofsky is not to promise anything you can't deliver. And what they wanted to do was to wait about a year from now, see what they could, in fact, deliver, and then announce that as part of that first, private beta that will happen. So this is a good year before they were prepared to make any announcement about what's going to happen in Windows 8. And I think that's what makes it really interesting.
Windows 8 would be, 2012?
Yeah, and this is a simple math thing if you think about it, because every Windows release now will be 3 years out. So if you think about Windows 7 coming out late 2009, you know, plus 3 years, 2012. But I think the big difference from a timing perspective is that with Windows 8, they're going to want to get that thing out before the holidays, right? That was one of the things they didn't really do effectively with Windows 7. You want that thing to ship in the summer. So I think the big difference is going to be, you know, Windows 8 in mid-2012, right? Mm-hmm. The first beta a year before that, mid-2011, which is a year from now, you know. So we're still a little ways out. And there was some scheduling information in the documents that leaked. And they talked a little bit. They didn't have the dates, but they talked about the timing of when things would happen. And it lines up just like Windows 7. You know, they'll make that first announce. They'll have it will be feature complete by that point, right? Mm-hmm. Just like Windows 7 was, and then they'll fix bugs and get feedback and all that stuff. So
I like some of the features, the one button reset, which I guess is because isn't steady state went away? I think for Windows 7,
it's gone. Yeah, there's no Windows 7 version,
which is really a shame because I thought steady state was really great, and this sounds like a push button steady state kind of.
Yeah, or a factory reset, or however you want to think about it. But I think the cool thing about it isn't, you know, steady state was designed for certain types of environments, whatever. I mean, this is something that individuals can use.
Right.
And I think something that people both think they need and in many cases really do need. You know, people ask me questions a lot about this supposed bit rot thing that's in Windows and how Windows slows down over time. And, you know, has Windows Vista at the time, or does Windows 7 now include any technologies to help combat that? Which, of course, they do. But, you know, PCs, as you load stuff up, as you add more and more stuff into the startup group of, you know, the applications that run little applets and so forth when the computer boots, you know, they slow down. They boot up more slowly. They shut down more slowly.
Right.
They go in and out of sleep more slowly. And this reset thing is an awesome idea. Hopefully it will be in Windows 8. I mean, that's, you know, again, the caveat. But the notion that you could literally just say, look, I want to reset the whole thing, and it backs up all of your settings and your data, reinstalls everything, reinstalls Windows.
Isn't that what steady state does?
Right, but this is for anybody. I mean, this is just for an individual.
Yeah. I think this is a fantastic idea, and I hope they do.
Well, the other thing that this ties into, and in some ways this is almost as interesting or as exciting, is there's an app store, supposedly.
Yeah. They snuck that one in. It was a footnote to one of the slides.
Yeah. And there's this is really interesting because it's referred to in some places as App Store, which is, of course, what the what Apple calls the iPhone App Store, right? Just App Store.
Right.
It's referred to in other places as Windows Store. But whatever it's called, there are a couple of really interesting things going on there. But one of the things is the notion of you have an account. You know, we already have a Windows Live ID today. And you log on to that thing, and you have applications that you've installed and perhaps bought online. And these are registered to your account. And when you do this push button
restart
thing, it actually reinstalls these things from the App Store, along with all of their settings and customizations and all that stuff. That's really exciting. The other thing that they're looking at with regards to these apps is the notion of a new type of application where it's essentially a web application designed for Windows 8 that will work in a browser in some cases, but will appear as a native app in Windows 8. And I think this ties into something that Microsoft has very subtly been talking about with regards to IE9, the new version of the browser, which is that in this version of Internet Explorer, for the first time, you get this notion of people with better hardware in their PCs are actually going to have a better experience with certain kinds of web applications because you'll have that hardware-backed acceleration, right? Now, that's something, if you think about the way things work in native applications, that actually has always been the case. And it's especially true of things like games, where if you have a higher-end graphics card, you can see better visuals, get a better experience or better performance, whatever, in a game. Now, the way the web works today is you might have a slightly different experience between browsers, but there's no real notion of, you know, despite claims by various browser makers that, you know, if you use this browser, this page is going to render 20 times faster. I mean, that doesn't really happen. You know, a real world performance between browsers, I think, is fairly subtle. But this opens up the opportunity, and it might be a mistake, by the way, but it's an interesting change where web applications would work like native games in that if you had better hardware, you could have a better experience. The other aspect of that, and I think this is very important too, is the notion of performance scaling or experience scaling, that these web applications would work in some way on a phone or a small screen device. They might work on an intermediate device like an iPad or some other kind of tablet. They would work on a PC, of course, in a web browser. They would work on Windows 8 as a sort of a pseudo-native application, and that the experience you got between those different types of devices would scale, right, within the application. That it would know what type of device it was running on and perhaps offer a better experience as you move up the chain, you know. And this is how Microsoft is trying to position Windows 8 as the ultimate, you know, richest experience for these applications. That, yes, it might work on a map, on a Mac and a web browser, but if you're running it on Windows 8, you know, natively as a sort of a, I keep calling it a pseudo, but as a native application, you're going to get a better experience.
Interesting.
Yeah, it really is interesting, and you know, again, it's almost speculation. I mean,
Early. I mean, remember when Longhorn they announced a new file system, which I noticed WinFS is not in the roadmap anytime.
No, it's not. Yeah. Yeah. So you know, there's all kinds of stuff. I mean, when you know the way Microsoft operates, a lot of this stuff will be very familiar. You know, it's going to, you know, back up and restore and reset and. You know,
well,
the startup
they already have that technology because of steady state, so that wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd expect something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm intrigued by all this stuff, and it's
and
tough
the App Store makes perfect sense. I mean, goodness, look at the dough Apple's raking in with it with their App Store. It just makes sense, and a Windows Store makes a lot of sense and I didn't even think of this whole automatic reinstall thing, which absolutely be fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, it all ties in together, but this is something we've talked about, I'm sure, on the podcast in the past, you know, and I can't pinpoint when this happened, but it was Longhorn. I mean, I think would be the time to say. When Longhorn was first announced, it was very exciting, and I think there was a lot of impetus among developers to get going on this stuff, as had always been the case with Microsoft platforms in the past. You know, developers were always very quick to jump on board and adopt these new technologies. But as Longhorn was delayed and delayed and delayed, I think this was like the breaking point where a lot of the Longhorn era technologies, the things that eventually did come out of that, you know, Avalon and WPF and, you know, Windows Communication Foundation, all that stuff, I don't think it was adopted as broadly, not just by third parties, but even by Microsoft themselves. You know, we've seen subsequent iterations of the Windows Live Essentials applications that don't really take advantage of any of that new stuff. Or Microsoft's own, whatever programs Microsoft makes, very slow. And I think a lot of that has to do with the the prominence of the web as an application platform. You know, Google pointed that out at Google I.O. this year, that most of the major new applications that have been created in the past 5 years have all been created on the web, right? Not on Windows or the Mac. That's the primary platform these days. But the other half of that, of course, is the mobile space, you know, the smartphones. And that's where new development is going, right? Mobile devices and on the web. And I think this is Microsoft's attempt to get a piece of that, right? That if they just created a platform, whatever it was, that was very Windows specific and only ran on Windows, that it would, from this point on, perhaps, it would only see limited success, and that they need to, you know, embrace the web. And I think that's what makes, you know, IE9, which, you know, to date, from an end user perspective, is not interesting at all, but it's something we need to keep an eye on, because I think this is the underlying platform, if you will, on which this stuff will run. And when Microsoft comes out every 7 to 8 weeks and says, hey, look, look how much faster it is, look how much better it is at standards, look at this, look at this. I think what's really happening there is they're getting this thing to a state of maturity where it actually is going to matter very, very much, you know. And I think it's interesting. And IE9 will be part of, it is going to be the browser that comes in Windows 8, even though it will ship separately before Windows 8. So, you know, there's a lot going on there.
Yeah. I mean, and again, you know, this is just a roadmap. It's not a guarantee. But I do like at least those two things, I think, are very significant.
Yeah. No, there's some neat stuff in there. So, yeah, we'll see. I mean, I expect, you know, I didn't expect anything like this this early. I get a lot of questions about Windows 8. And there's just been nothing to say. And now suddenly there's a lot to say. But, you know, it's equally likely that the next 9 months will be epic silence.
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. They didn't want to say this now. I think I completely agree with you. This was a faux pas.
Yeah, this was an unfortunate thing, and not what they want, you know, from their perspective. I mean, from my perspective, this was like a gift from heaven, you know.
Hey, but, it gives you something to talk about for the next 2 years. And, you know, if the Aztecs are right, it doesn't really matter anyway.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right.
Could just be, we'll never get to 2012. Let's take a break. Microsoft has a response to something we said last week. They agree.
Yeah.
Go figure. Paul was right. But before we say that, let's say this. This show brought to you by our good friends at Citrix, the makers of so many useful tools. I hope you're trying them all. Go to Assist, go to Meeting, go to My PC, the Citrix Enterprise servers, which I know a lot of you use in business. Let me talk a little bit about GoToAssist. We used GoToAssist, started using it during the screensavers days on TV to help people with their computers. Since then, boy, oh boy, I mean, I liked it then. It has gotten better and better, faster, easier to use, and lots of features for the support professional. They call it GoToAssist Express. And if you are in tech support, or you have software you support, or even if you're just the tech support person for your family, you need to know about GoToAssist Express. Recently named the worldwide market leader in remote support by Frost & Sullivan. It's the number one support remote support solution worldwide because it's easy to use, it's affordable, it's completely secure using, as always, 128-bit SSL encryption. Mac to Windows, Windows to Mac, Mac to Mac, Windows to Windows. It works with GoToAssist. And you don't have to have software pre-installed on your client's machines. You just say to them, I want to start a support session. You could say, here's a link. With my mom, I just sent her to GoToAssist.com, gave her an ID. She entered it, and all of a sudden, I'm in her computer fixing her stuff like ceiling cat. I can see what software is running, what operating system, what security software, anything running in the background. I can copy files from my computer to hers just by drag and drop. So if I've got a hot fix or an update, a registry fix, that kind of thing, I can just drag it over. It just really is a slick, easy-to-use system. Up to 8 sessions at once. They have unattended, which means you don't have to always have your client there the first time you do. But after that, they can turn it on, and you can get in there anytime you want. Go to Assist, brought to you by Citrix. Free customer service 24/7 for you. Turn yourself into a support hero. The person, the go-to guy, a gal or guy who really can get the job done fast with Go to Assist Express. Try it free. I hope I mentioned that at the beginning. Try it free for 30 days. I'm not trying to sell you a pig and a poke here. No siree. You just get to try it for free by going to gotoassist.com/windows, G-O-T-O, assist.com/windows, and try it for 30 days. Then you tell me how you like it. Go to Assist Express from our friends at Citrix. We thank them so much for their support of Windows Weekly. So last week, you said this. You said that, there's all this attention paid to Apple these days, but let's not forget who's still the king.
Well, yeah, okay. I mean, I
you didn't say it quite like that. I did, though.
No, I didn't say it quite like that. But, over time, I've been making this argument, that it's easy to get caught up and excited about different things. But, it's amazing to me how people just write off Microsoft like they don't exist, when, in fact, they dominate a pretty huge portion of the computing industry and are not even part of the conversation in the eyes of some, digerati types, for whatever reason. I think a lot of us tend to focus on what's new and hot and exciting and all that stuff. And, we kind of forget. And I was very interested to see Microsoft actually just say, look, here are some numbers, And, I it's basically what we talked about. And it puts some things in perspective. And, they were very passive aggressive, right? They didn't often say, here's what we do and here's what they do. Right. There were a few of those things. One of them was net income, for example. So, for example, in the past fiscal years for Apple, Google, and Microsoft, Microsoft's net income is almost three times as high as Apple's.
Wow.
And Microsoft's net income was more than Apple and Google's net incomes combined.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And, it's just one of those things. The information was there, right? Anyone could have looked this up. But it seems like no one does, And
can I defend a little bit the pundits as speaking as one?
Yeah.
That really what people are looking at is the trend line, not so much the absolute values right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But, and I didn't see – it's interesting. In my own article about this, I didn't point this out. But one of the things that was in this article was about – it was net income compared from 2001 to today at Microsoft. And the point there was to say – and again, this is passive aggressive because this was never written explicitly. This was AKA when Steve Ballmer came on board and started running the company. A lot of people have been pointing to Steve Ballmer and saying this guy needs to be pushed out. He's broken the company. And this was like a way of saying, oh, really? Because look at these numbers.
Right.
Look, I'm not.
It does show them. It makes them look a little defensive.
Well, wouldn't you be?
Yeah.
If your net income was over that of Apple and Google combined this year, and you're watching Apple and Google get all the press, wouldn't you be a little defensive?
Yes.
Microsoft has apparently already lost the cloud computing market, despite the fact that by any measurable metric, they are in fact winning.
Right.
Right. I mean, it is, and I'm not. I know a lot of people would assume that, Paul's like the Windows guy or whatever, the Microsoft guy. And, I have this, need or desire or something for them to win. I couldn't honestly care less in many ways. I look at this more along the lines of common sense and logic. And, I write about things like Apple or Google because they're popular and people use them and they're important. And to me, it doesn't actually matter. But I think the reason that this stuff is interesting is because, I've been kind of saying this in vaguer terms all along. But I've been saying that because this is the truth, we all get caught up in things. Last year when Google announced Google Wave, I thought this was going to be the biggest thing in the world.
We were kind of wrong.
Right. That, then I used it. It was terrible.
Yeah.
I thought
that's the key is to speak the truth.
Yeah.
Speak the truth.
Well, to be honest.
Be honest.
We are human beings. We are excited about
mistakes.
Technology.
Yes.
Well, not just make mistakes, but we can get caught up in excitement over something because we are enthusiastic about
it.
There's nothing wrong with that. But it is interesting, and this is something I've sort of recoiled against in recent months. Microsoft gets written off. They're not just competitive. A lot of these areas where they're written off, they're actually doing very, very well. Now, there are cases where they're not doing very, very well. Smartphones, they have no cohesive answer to the iPad, for example, right now, which I think a lot of people are pointing to as a to their detriment,
And this Kin thing has to be a little bit of a blow.
A little bit, but you know, again, we're gonna get to that. I don't think that's as horrible as it sounds, but you know, we'll see. So, you know, Microsoft's response to the iPad thing, and again, done very passive aggressively. You have to really read between the lines of what they're saying, because they present numbers, you know. And one of the things they talked about was, and this is the absolute truth, you know, when the netbook market first started 4 years ago, Windows was some tiny percentage and it was all Linux. And everyone was talking, oh, this is it. We knew that the day of Linux was going to come on the desktop. This is the year, you know. Mm-hmm. And every January I would look for these stories, you know, 2005 is going to be the year of desktop Linux. Oh, 2006 is going to be the year, you know. If you look at netbooks today, Linux is a non-event, you know.
Yeah. And I keep hoping. There, so. I do. I'm a Linux fanboy. I admit it. But you know where Linux is taking off? Android is really where
the phone. Right. And by the way, this is. I don't know if this is irony. You know,
it is irony. It is absolutely.
It might be. But the fact that the two most interesting and soon to be the two most, you know, best selling probably smartphone platforms are essentially the also rans in the PC industry, right? Linux and Mac OS X. It's fascinating to me.
It doesn't surprise me. You know, the same, I think having, this is the legacy problem.
Sure.
This is a good blog post. I'll give it to you. Okay. The legacy problem. Look at look at why, for instance, we've been hobbled a little bit by cell phone technologies in the States is because of the legacy problem. Whereas somewhere like Thailand or South Korea, they just started from scratch and boom. Germany had a huge industrial advantage after World War II because they had nothing and they started from scratch, whereas the older industrialized states were saddled with legacy.
Japan as well. And, you know, Japan rode that to great success in cars and electronics and actually killed the American markets for those types of products, essentially. Not obviously American cars.
Because they had no infrastructure. They started from scratch. Yeah. So, of course, and with a good deal of cash from the Marshall Plan, but we won't go into that. But but I think you can make a pretty strong case that what holds Microsoft back is the legacy problem.
Absolutely.
And what keeps them in from being successful in mobile platforms is that they were successful on the desktop.
It is a scary thing. For an individual to do this and for a company to do this. When you're making money doing something and someone says, you don't understand, this isn't the future, you need to stop doing this.
Precisely.
It's impossible. It's impossible. It's like quitting your well-paying job to become a, to do whatever it is you do, you know, on your own and not making any money for a while with the hope that the dream is going to be real.
Right.
It requires a leap of faith that many people can't make.
Success is in some ways fetters. I know this now as a small business person. I now see it much more clearly because you create a business on a business model, on a plan.
Right.
And it's very hard then to shift that. The whole business is structured around, you know, in Microsoft's case, selling a certain number of units, a certain amount of upgrades. You know, it's structured fundamentally at the very roots around this business model. It's very hard to shift. Look how hard Microsoft's been working to make software be rental instead of purchase.
Sure.
They can't
One of the themes we've talked about a lot on this podcast is that Microsoft's biggest success, essentially, with Windows, they've never been able to duplicate that in any other market. You know, the video game market didn't happen. The cell phone market didn't happen that way. The digital media market didn't work that way. Mm-hmm. You know, every time they've tried to duplicate that success, they've never had a success like they've had with Windows. It just doesn't work that way. And you know, unfortunately for Microsoft, I mean, the couple of times they've done things differently, those haven't worked either. You know, the Zoom didn't exactly take off,
right?
For example. You know, there are some concerns with something like Windows Phone that just calling this thing Windows Phone might be a mistake. Right. Whereas to the Microsoft mentality, why wouldn't they ride the coattails of their best brand? You know, it's a tough call. And I don't pretend to have the answer. I mean, I don't know. You know, I can tell you that the Windows Phone will look and work nothing like Windows. So why are they calling it a Windows Phone? You know, I don't know, because it's a branding thing, I suppose. I mean, I think that's the answer. But yeah, you know, we'll see. I mean, I guess the point here is simply that with regards to the iPad, for example, you know, Apple will sell X number of million iPads this year. It will sell probably three times that next year and on and on we go. Microsoft's contention is not being there at the beginning of that market doesn't matter because we weren't there at the beginning of the, you know, of the graphical user interface and we dominated that. We weren't there at the beginning of the network market and we dominated that. You know, Microsoft doesn't always have to be first to come in from behind and kind of take it. Now, does that mean it's going to happen with regards to the iPad? Absolutely not. Who knows? I mean, anything could happen. You know, we'll see. Yeah, same thing with the Windows Phone. I mean, that market is dominated by other players right now. Microsoft has a lot of work to do. Branding it as Windows, doing what they're doing, it doesn't guarantee success, but it doesn't guarantee failure either. And I think that's the thing that kind of rankles me a little bit about this stuff, when Microsoft is just not considered, because they really do have a lot of market strength and, by the way, are making a lot of money, you know, so they can back these initiatives. And I guess we'll see. Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, that's
I like
sure
that
true.
They're fighting back. I mean,
It would be easy for them to be like, play it like IBM did, which is just we're done.
Yes, and they did it for too long. You know, with Apple, there was an, to the press, it was unspoken. I think within Microsoft, it was very much an explicit rule. They were never going to mention the name of that company.
Right.
They were never going to say the word Mac.
Right.
You know, and they just ignored the company for a long time. And tried to. It just doesn't work that way.
Mm-mm.
You know, you can't. It's just Microsoft is at their best when they're being aggressive, and they're only aggressive when they're getting their butt kicked by someone else. And and thank God for the Apples and Googles and whatevers of the world, because otherwise, we've seen what Microsoft does when they don't have to compete. They do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So this is good for everybody.
I find this Meta stuff fascinating, it's easy to play Monday morning quarterback
but my point here is simply, and you know this because we just talked about it,
right?
I have been bringing this stuff up for a long time. I'm just glad to see them finally doing it. I mean, I used to say to Microsoft when Vista came out, you know, you need to be more aggressive in countering Apple. They're lying about you, and people are hearing it and they're believing it. And you know what? Over time, it's not going to matter what the truth is. The perception is out there. You got to do something.
Yeah.
And they used to say to me, "Well, what would you have us do?" And I said, "Look, I don't have answers. I have criticisms. I'm a reviewer. I can tell you what you're doing wrong." pretend to have you.
And it's the occupational hazard of the pundit. And in some ways, I like it that I finally got enough cojones. Because for so many years, I sat and watched. I watched the tech boom and then the tech bust. Yep. And by the sidelines. And, of course, I risked nothing and lost nothing, but gained nothing. And and for the first time, I got a little skin in the game starting Twit. And it gives me it gives me a lot more sympathy and understanding for the difficulties that any company faces in this very fast changing space.
Right.
It's tough. And now we get to Kin. Talk about.
Right. Speaking of things that didn't work out as anticipated.
Whoa, talk about whiplash. Okay, Kin, 6 weeks old.
Not even. So here's the thing.
What happened? Now, you kind of predicted this. You couldn't figure out what the market was.
Right. You will recall when they first announced Kin in April, they didn't announce pricing. And I said to them, you know, I don't understand. What do you mean? Why don't we know how could you announce this and not have the prices? And the reason was that they were selling it through Verizon as their exclusive carrier. And Verizon wanted to make this announcement separately. I don't know if they were trying to gauge the reaction or whatever it was. But in my preview of Kin, I wrote that for this, and I think I said this on the podcast at the time, for this thing to be successful, because of the kind of phone it is. In other words, it's okay that the Kin is not a true smartphone. And by true smartphone, I basically mean it doesn't have an app store. You know, I mean, I think there are a number of criteria, and I think that these things are always changing because capabilities improve. But to be a smartphone in today's market, you need many things. But one of those things is an app store. And the Kin doesn't have one. So the thing sits somewhere between a feature phone and a smartphone, or perhaps is simply a feature phone. It's not a smartphone. So you can't price this thing like a smartphone. And so I said, if you look at the average price of a smartphone plan, you know, data, text, voice, you're talking about, after fees and taxes, about $80 a month. That's pretty much where we're at to start, and it goes up from there. I said, the Kin has to cost half of that. Because if you don't have any access to apps, You know, yeah, you can browse the web on the little dicky screen the thing has or whatever, but that's not the same, right? Yes, you can get email. You can do that stuff on a feature phone, right? It can't cost as much as a smartphone. The other thing, and this is what we talked about on the podcast, and I couldn't believe, I asked for clarification on this, and this was literally what I was told. The target market for this device was teenagers and what I call tweeners, you know, people who are a little bit older than teenagers, but they're still living at home and are financially reliant on their parents. They would want this phone, but couldn't afford it because they don't have jobs or have very little money. So their parents would buy it for them and pay for it. So the target market was an audience that had no money, right? Which to me was ludicrous. But again, but those people are out there. Let's face it. I mean, that market does exist. But why would you spend $80 a month on a phone for your kid that lacked the capabilities of a true smartphone? Why would you do that? The whole thing just never made sense to me. You know, and Verizon, I mean, right before this thing got canceled, there was a story about Verizon was lowering the price of this thing. They lowered the upfront cost of it, which was nothing anyway. That $100 to $200 you would spend to acquire the device is not the cost of it. You know, what's $80 times 24? That's plus the 200. I mean, that's the cost of the device. If you're going to spend that much money on a phone, I mean, get an iPhone. I mean, you know, what do you, I mean, obviously. So.
And by the way, that's what these tweeners want. I mean, there's just no question that they want an iPhone.
Right. Well,
and if they're going to, you know,
it's pretty clear based on the dates when the designs of these phones leaked, they clearly intended to ship this thing a lot further back than they did.
God, it must break their heart. I mean, how much did they spend on this phone?
Millions and millions and millions.
Oh, it must kill them.
Now, so the good news part of this is I always felt like the Kin was a distraction from the main Windows Phone stuff. I thought it was odd that they would ship something that was sort of a Windows Phone before Windows Phone. I think that Microsoft has too many mobile device products or mobile platforms, right? They have all these crazy Windows CE derivatives, embedded versions of traditional Windows, and it's ridiculous. You know, there were too many of these things to begin with, and when you look at this thing, you think, well, why couldn't this have just been Windows Phone?
Right.
It's coming out in 6 months. I mean, it just seemed like a waste of time. So, now the good news is this: for all of the silliness around the Kin. Technically speaking, with one major and glaring exception, it was actually a decent device. You know, I think that there's some interesting stuff going on there that needs to make its way to Windows Phone. And the key among those is this Kin Studio thing, right, which is the online service. It's sort of like Microsoft has something now for existing Windows mobile phones called My Phone, which is very pared back but similar in concept, the idea being that you have an online service where everything on the phone is backed up. So if you lose the phone or it gets stolen, you don't lose anything because it's all up in the cloud. But the beauty of Kin Studio, aside from just the graphical niceness of it, is that it would automatically upload over the air all of the content on your phone. So as you took pictures, they would head up to the cloud. And what it meant was that your phone could never really fill up because it would make space by taking out older content, but it would always be up there so you could get to it.
This is like the Sidekick did this.
Yeah, and the space was infinite.
Yeah.
In the sense that there was no, you know, 2 or 5 gig limit or whatever it was. You could just fill it, until you didn't have the phone anymore. You just keep going. The Kin Studio works very, very, very well. And it's a neat... it's a neat looking thing. If you go to look at it in a web browser, it's actually really nice. And it's something that needs to be in Windows Phone. You know, the other aspect of it is it's on Verizon, right? And Verizon, you know, they price the phone wrong, but they have an awesome network. And that was one of the other things I noticed driving across this country. Aside from the East Coast, there are vast stretches of this country where my iPhone either had an Edge icon on it or no service.
Yeah.
And it was astonishing how much of the they're doing construction here. I don't know if you can hear the
bang. Yeah, no big deal. Go right ahead.
It sounds like someone's trying to break in.
It does. It sounds a little bit like there's somebody unhappy outside. Maybe a Kin owner. Fortunately, they're few and they're weak.
It's a condo unit that they're renovating or something.
Don't worry about it.
So, but Verizon worked the whole time, you know.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
And It almost, in fact, I called my wife a couple of times. The first time she was confused about what the call was because I could never get out on the phone, on the iPhone. And then I finally said, you know, I get this Kin thing. I mean, this would, and it worked every single time, you know. And the
Kin was a better,
the first time I called her.
Phone.
Yeah, she said, it is a better phone.
Wow.
And it, because of the network, I would imagine. You know, she said,
I would buy it. I mean, at a penny, I would buy it, but I still don't want to pay the $80 a month. So maybe right. The smart thing would be for Verizon to say, hey, we'll do a $40 plan. Then it's a good phone. My daughter would want this.
Be a good phone, and it's something that could last for a couple of years. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish they would do that. It's a nice little Zoom device, whatever that's worth. It takes great pictures and very high quality video. I don't have the Kin 2, but that one actually also is even better. Apparently, higher resolution, more megapixels, and HD quality video. But I have to say, you know, the quality of the pictures and video I took on this trip were very, very high. So. You know, it's good. Anyway, as long as the good stuff from Kin goes forward and the dumb stuff, it won't. And we know the dumb stuff won't because it's, you know, it was very Kin specific. I think it's okay. I remember being very confused at this announcement, you know, going to the event and wondering, just not quite understanding why they were doing this. And I think you can fall into a trap where something sounds like a good idea. You know, they have research that they've done, and look, this market exists, and we can make money by selling this thing to these people. And you say, oh, well, okay, you know, it sounds like it's possible, but it just never made sense to me.
You know, this is a good example of where Microsoft has too many divisions fighting one another, because this clearly wasn't the Windows Phone division. This is the Kin division, and if it had been the Windows Phone division, they would say, well, let's just wait, and we'll do it all in November.
Yep.
And they wouldn't have this egg on their face. Now, I got to say, I think there is a long-term penalty to doing this. When you kill a phone in 6 weeks.
Well, except for one thing. You're talking about the doom cloud over Microsoft and maybe over Windows Phone.
You got to think people are saying, I mean, look, this is making headlines. People see the iPhone 4 comes out. 3 days later, Microsoft kills the Kin. You got to think that somebody's looking
at
Windows.
You're almost adding it together. Well, except for one thing. To the world at large, no one had any idea that the Kin was from Microsoft or had any with Windows Phone.
They got to hope so. They got to hope so, because otherwise...
Well, if you go look at the advertising, go look at the way this thing is presented, no one, I think, ever equated this with, you know, Microsoft. I mean, it's just a...
it was never the Microsoft Kin phone. It was just the Kin phone.
Yeah, they very clearly were going after a unique brand. You know, it was something that was just its own thing.
And they never bought, did they buy TV ads, or was it just that crazy web ad campaign that they did?
No, there were TV ads. They spent a lot of money advertising this thing.
Oh, man. So you don't think there's a long-term negative?
I don't think so. I mean, you know what? Their stuff is so far in the toilet anyway. Who cares? This is, this is just like
how
a
could
courtesy.
Could it get any worse? Flash,
you know?
Because does the little, I'm thinking for Abby. Abby does not want a smartphone. This is interesting. She has an iPhone, right? And she's going to college. She says, Dad, I don't want a smartphone. I want a dumb phone. I just want to be able to make phone calls and text. Would the Kin 1 would be good for that?
It would be. But you know what? Again, when you're spending that much per month, it would be irresponsible to do that. If it was cheaper, I would say, yeah, it's actually, it is a good phone. It really is. The web browser is actually pretty decent.
They need to cut the service cost in half.
Exactly, in half. The social networking stuff is good. Although, by the way, that was the thing I alluded to earlier. The glaring functional defect in this phone is that it makes it very easy to share things, you know, over Facebook or Windows Live or whatever. But it's not instantaneous. I would upload photos and videos to, you know, Facebook or wherever. Using this very cool little, you just drag it into a little hole, you know, like a little Kin spot thing. It's a little hole. You actually drag stuff into the hole. Speaking of toilets. And
a little spiral as it goes down?
Yeah, it really does. It spins. And
oh, no.
It's pretty neat, but it's not instantaneous. So on my iPhone, I would take a photo, and then I would go to the Facebook app, and I would upload the photo, and I'd make a little caption. And I would click post, and assuming I was in one of the 13 straight miles of actual network connectivity, This was an unbelievable frustration on the iPhone. But assuming I had connectivity, you know, that thing would upload, and then it would be on Facebook right then. Mm. With the Kin, even though it had network connectivity, these things don't happen instantaneous. They happen like every 15 minutes or something. And it was a little odd. I mean, when you want to be constantly connected with your friends or whatever, which I think these people would, you know, the target market,
right.
15 minutes later is not cutting it. You need, right. You want it to happen then. And I honestly think an iPhone would be a better deal for your daughter. She doesn't have to use any of the other stuff. I mean, you can take it all off.
Yeah. Isn't that funny? I said that. I said, well, just don't use the.
Yeah. Well, caveat.
Is there a chance that Verizon will give it a cut rate data plan?
Yeah, I mean, anything's possible. I wish they would. I wish they would. In fact, you know, they could just do it along the lines of like a tiered, a tiered pricing plan.
Yeah. Boy, it just, it's got to be a little embarrassing to have to kill it so fast. Why would you even kill it? I know.
Why bother, right?
I mean, just, you know, why announce that you're killing it? Just keep selling it. Pretend it's selling.
I think the problem was they had announced previously that they were going to ship it in Europe, and that was going to happen in time for, I think it was September.
I see.
You know, and if September kind of came, I mean, someone was going to say something at some point, right?
Like, whatever happened to that phone?
Well, Vodafone would have, people might have, the three people in Europe who wanted a Kin might have bothered Vodafone, and I mean, I think eventually someone would have said, oh, we're not getting that now.
Right.
I mean, I guess you have to kind of announce it.
Yes.
You know, it's funny, it's unlikely that this announcement will do anything to stem the sales of the device because they were already, in the dumpster. But
it can't be true. But Gizmodo said 500 units.
That's silly.
That can't possibly be true.
No, they gave out more than that just to reviewers. I mean,
so Truckee's saying there's a $40 plan for Kin for 450 minutes, but that so you don't do you have to buy a data plan or can you not?
Yeah, no, you have to buy a data plan. Yeah.
See, that's what gets you.
Yeah. Yeah, if you could get this thing for $40 a month, all told, I mean, text, voice,
everything.
Data.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, they do sell it without a contract. Let's see. I mean, it's a CDMA phone, so it's useless. And it's $199.99 if you don't get a contract.
Yeah, so what you're getting is a 4 8-gigabyte Zune.
But it does have the Zune pass and all that. And how much RAM did it have? How much memory did it have?
It's 4 or 8, I think.
It's
the
not
small
huge. But I guess with a Zune pass, that's fine. I bet you she'd like this.
Yeah, it's not bad. It really is a nice little phone. I mean, and I think that's the thing that surprised people. You know, when you get your hands on it, it's like, this is actually nice. You know, it's nice. It's not, you know, it's not like they made this hunk of junk and we can all laugh. Oh, the Kin, Microsoft, you know. This is actually a nice little phone. I mean, I think positioned correctly and priced correctly, there's no reason this thing couldn't have gone on for years. You could make the argument that that Verizon killed it in some ways by overpricing it, maybe.
It's still a penny. Wow.
It's overpriced even at a penny, Leo. I'm just saying, at the right price point, this would be okay. The penny is not it.
The penny is not it. That's the problem. Okay, therein lies the difficulty.
Yes.
You need to pay me to buy this phone. Yeah. Hey, good news for Internet Explorer.
I guess, although, this is another one of those things. And this falls into that category of, conventional wisdom and how people. I was looking at these market share stats. It was a big deal for some reason when IE went below 60%. But for all of this so-called linear slide that IE has been suffering from a usage share perspective, this entire year, their usage share has been within 1.7 percentage points of, of where they started from. I mean, it hasn't really gone down that much. And in fact, if you look at it over the course of this year, it's actually been flat, statistically speaking, since March. I mean, it's not as horrible as people are making it sound. And the one thing that everyone conveniently forgets is that the most frequently used browser on Earth is the latest version of IE and has been basically since it came out. And it's dramatically higher than the other browsers. I mean, you know, and it's like, yeah, okay, I get it. You know, IE is sliding off into irrelevance here, supposedly, but it's not quite like that. I think the story here for me isn't, you know, IE comeback. I mean, we're talking about less than 1 percentage point of gain, right? It did grow faster than all of the other browsers. It grew faster than Chrome, grew faster than Safari. You know, Firefox actually lost over half of a percentage point, whatever. To me, again, I just like with the Microsoft fights back with the numbers story, is this conventional wisdom thing, you know, that people have been writing off this browser and they're in first place. You know, I mean, they've always been in first place. So, yes, they've gone from 62% of the market to 60 point something percent of the market this year over 6 months. But there is no other browser jumping up to take their place. You know, Firefox flatlined and now is falling. You know, Chrome is growing quickly, but as you know from the Mac, growing quickly doesn't equate to massive, you know, share gains, you know, when you're starting off from a very small place. They're still well under 10%. So, you know, again, it's like perception versus reality. To me, that's the actual story to this.
And it doesn't, and it's kind of meaningless, to be honest. I mean, it's not.
Yeah. Well, I was actually not dumbstruck, but I was struck by, I mean, almost how excited Microsoft's announcement about this was, like they had made some huge jump. I mean, but right. I think given the news, I mean, it's like relentless every month. IE falls again. Except that they're still at 60%. I mean, you know, it's really, it's not as dramatic as many have made it sound. Although, to be fair, I've certainly written my share of IE falls again stories. I mean, you know, when it's a slow Tuesday, what are you going to do? But it's just, to me, again, I think the big story here is just, you know, perception versus reality.
Well, it looks like I'm just ordering a phone for Abby right now, and it's $40. Really?
What is?
The Kin.
Yeah, really? For the data plan? For yep. Everything?
For everything.
You can get everything for
unlimited text.
Yep.
Data.
Unlimited data?
Well, I mean, let me see. I don't know. Yeah, it looks like it. The basically, all I was able to spend was $40.
Per month?
Per month.
Okay, then that's...
Now I'm liking it. I'm getting this for Abby. This is great. Unlimited calling, unlimited texting. Yep. That's all she really wanted. You said it's a pretty good camera, right?
It's a great camera, you know, for what it is. I mean, you'd be shocked. I can show you these side-by-side pictures I've taken. I mean, when you look at the pictures I took, the iPhone one, you know, again, it's an older iPhone, but, you know, washed out, blurry, and then the Kin one is bright, crisp, clear. I mean, it's a big difference, yeah. It is. She's in the right age group, you know, and I think she will like it.
Well, very interesting. I'm going to surprise her with it. Look, dear. Look at the hot new phone. It's not a Microsoft.
I think that she should start a Kin enthusiast website, and then you should do a podcast just about the Kin.
I bet we get 500 listeners right off the bat. Out of the
problem. The problem would be having anything to talk about.
They're saying in the chat room that she would be mocked. I don't think she'd be mocked.
No, you know, the one thing I've noticed, and I think we need to be honest
were
about this
mocked?
Too again. No. I mean, no. Again, like I said, most people who see this thing are intrigued by it. It's actually high quality and nice looking, you know. Most people out there in the world don't have high-end smartphones.
They have crappy old phones. Exactly.
I see people texting and taking pictures and browsing the web and playing stupid little games on phones I've never even heard of that are not smartphones, you know. This is absolutely a step up from that.
All right.
Definitely.
Okay. She's going to be so happy when I give her her new Kin.
Which you got the one?
The one, right? Not the two.
That's the one I prefer.
The Pebble. The little one. Yeah, because she can slip it in her pocket, in her purse.
Yep.
I think she's going to like this.
I do too.
Yeah. It's actually exactly what she was asking for. And it's interesting that she's an 18-year-old would be want something a little more regressive. She says, I don't want all the stuff that's on the iPhone. It's too complicated. Yeah. It's too fragile. Oh.
Good for her. I mean, you know, we have to be very careful, you and I and others like us, because we live in this kind of a bubble, you know. I saw when The Kin first came out, somebody somewhere wrote a story, guaranteed, where it said, you know, the browser in The Kin is based on IE whatever version on Windows, and thus Microsoft is out to lunch because they're so far behind. And I mean, you know, people don't really think about stuff like that, and it's not actually relevant. You know, what's relevant is, does this thing work on the sites that I want to visit or whatever, you know? And when you use a phone that's, stand that a, you know, a full-featured website is not necessarily going to scale very well to that device unless they've written a mobile version of the site anyway. I mean, I think people understand the limitation of the screen and so forth.
Right.
I don't know. I think it's a nice little device.
I want one. It's so cute.
Leo.
Hey, one thing I don't want
to... It's the hair.
It's the hair. You know what? It goes with my 80s disco shirt and the hair.
You got to get a Kin tattoo.
I want... Oh, yeah. You know, there Kin you logo? Go. Like the Zune guy?
Yeah.
There you go. I'd be the only one.
We all want to be just like that guy.
I don't have a tattoo. This would be... It's time for me to get a tat to go with my 80s look.
Yep. Kin.
Kin. You know, here's a fun one. I downloaded, so we're doing Mac Break Weekly on Tuesday, and it's, oh, big news just comes out. Hulu Plus announced. You can get it now. I downloaded it on my iPad. All excited. You can't use it.
Yeah.
You can get the app.
Apparently, I don't recall this, but I guess this is how Hulu itself launched. It was an invitation-only deal. And, you know, I've had a Hulu account, not that that means anything, for some amount of time, but... I don't have access to Hulu Plus. But I do like the idea of this $10 a month thing. And this is, we've talked about this. Why doesn't Apple do this? Why doesn't Zune have this? This is the, you know, if my kids were out of the house, I would not have cable TV. There's so much content available online, either through things like the Netflix service, which is fantastic and actually getting better all the time, or this Hulu stuff. And I think YouTube is going to go in this direction. Of course, Google's got Google TV. Coming and so forth. I mean, there's so much stuff, you know. I think this is a good deal. But again, you know, logic be damned. I mean, $10 a month to me seems like a good deal. But then again, you know, Rhapsody and Zune Plus, Zune Pass and so forth.
You know who the real competition is? Pirate Bay.
Well,
don't you think?
From a sheer, maybe. I mean, I think the problem with that pirated shows, wherever you get them from, is that it's not convenient, you know? Being able to click a button and have the thing display is great. I think the advantage of Hulu over Netflix, because they are actually kind of different things, is that, you know, the Hulu service is going to give you access to these shows as they occur.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is a neat thing, yeah.
They should have launched it before Lost ended and 24 ended, because those are the things that drove it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I know people must buy a season passes for TV shows on iTunes, which is very expensive. You know, $20-$30 for a season, $10 a month for any number of TV shows, you know, whatever they are, new and old, to me seems like a much better deal. Because, you know, TV's not like music, right? You don't watch it again and again and again, usually. There are some movies that are worth watching multiple times, but I mean, maybe 3% or something, 5%, maybe some very small percentage. I mean, how many TV shows do you watch again and again? Well, my daughter watches the same shows.
Kids are different than grown-ups.
She's eight.
My experience is grown-ups have one or two TV shows they watch a week.
The Office or Lost
yes. or whatever.
Right, right.
And you never watch them again. You watch them once.
Absolutely not. Years later, you might. But years later...
Yeah, once you've forgotten. Once you're so old that you forgot what happened on Seinfeld 38 years ago. Yeah.
Right, one of the few benefits of aging.
Exactly.
That everything is new again. So I think that a subscription service for TV makes a lot of sense. Because, you know, I think people would tend to...
Everybody wants this.
Take advantage of it.
Everybody wants... What they want, I'll tell you what they want. They want a la carte. They don't want to buy, and this is, of course, what the networks and the cable companies don't want. They love bundles because they have a lot of crap and some good stuff.
Right.
Right. It's the same reason the record labels never wanted to unbundle albums. There was one good song, and you bought a $13 CD for one song. And they realized as soon as you could buy individual songs, they're screwed.
Well,
you got to think the networks are thinking the same thing.
It's so dumb how they think. I mean, you sell two things. You know, you sell singles and you sell albums. Actually, you probably, if you're smart, you sell more than those two things. You also sell concert tickets and so forth. But, you know, to look at 50% of your market and say, this thing is killing this other thing is the wrong way to look at it. You should be happy that this thing exists. You should also be asking why the other thing, the album, doesn't have more good songs on it, and whether you're, you know, hiring the right bands or signing the right bands or whatever.
Well, you know, the truth is, it's very hard to make a great TV show or a great song. And most of the time, you know, probably 8 out of 10 times you fail. So the networks, the movie companies, and the record industry live on the hits. And they swallow the cost of the flops. It makes it much more palatable for them if they can sell you the flops. And, of course, people have changed. We don't buy it anymore. We want individual. Look, once you start to taste the freedom of downloading a show, just the show, it's over for the networks. They're not going to be able to sell something about Larry or whatever it is.
Well, there's all, you know, the other thing that's interesting about this to me is that there's nothing worse than watching a show like Lost week to week,
right?
Because it's always a cliffhanger. You got to know what happens next. And when that show first came out, my wife and I didn't watch it on TV. We watched it on DVD, so you could watch them all back to back, and it was fantastic. These streaming services offer the same sort of thing. You know, we're watching Heroes, for example, over Netflix. When you can get Heroes on Netflix, not for free. I mean, you're paying for Netflix, but you know, you get other things. It's essentially a subscription service. The notion of walking into a store and buying a DVD set of season one of Heroes, or going to iTunes and paying the $20 or $30 or whatever that would cost on iTunes is ludicrous. It makes the other way of doing it so dumb that it just doesn't make sense anymore.
Right.
And I understand, you know, this is just like the Microsoft thing. It's like you have to be able to walk away from the way you're making money now and to take that risk. But I think once people experience this, they're not going to want to do it the other way. You know, the notion of sitting in front of the TV at 8 p.m. on Thursday, because that's when the TV shows start.
It's so old-fashioned.
It's cute, but it's old-fashioned.
So old-fashioned.
And I know there's some people who can't get over that, but you're going to die eventually. Sorry.
Here's the problem.
I mean,
there's live events. Although, did you see that Mobi TV sold millions of copies thanks to this? And I bought one of them to me thanks to the soccer. I wanted to watch the World Cup, and I watched it on my iPhone because of Mobi TV.
Nice.
A lot of people bought it. So sports, I guess you could do some sort of streaming thing.
Sports is always a big deal. But, you know, there's also new ways to do sports, right? One of the aggravating, if you follow sports at all, you know, one of the aggravating things for me is we have for the Celtics and for the Red Sox, excellent local announcers. But when the Celtics are on national TV, or the Red Sox, or they're in the playoffs and you get these other, and they're on other stations, so you have other announcers, you get confronted by these terrible announcers. Or if you watch football, I mean, most of the announcers in football are terrible, regardless of what network we're talking about. I think the future of that stuff is going to be, yes, you'll always need some kind of it could be a subscription service, but, and they already have those, of course. But it's going to be the ability to see a game and watch and choose the announcers you listen to, or the different angles you'll be able to see, you know, not just have it be dictated by the network. It's very cool on the iPhone and on the iPad. You have a Major League Baseball application, it's evolved over the past couple of years, which has been really neat to watch. But one of the things you can do is choose which announcers you listen to as you're watching a game or listening to a game, and that's awesome. It's just awesome. So if you're I'm from Boston, but if I were to move to Colorado or something and I miss the Red Sox, you know, I'd be able to use that to listen to or watch them and with the voices of the guys that I know and care about back in Boston, you know? So I think all of this stuff can evolve.
Yeah, I think what's happened pretty clearly is that consumers have been empowered. This is kind of something the Clue Train said 10 years ago would happen. As soon as, you know, information starts to flow freely and consumers get a taste of freedom, it's kind of tough to enforce these bad models on consumers. I've said for a long time in speeches, people just, it's simple. You want to know what people want with media? They want what they want, where they want it, when they want it, and they don't want any restrictions. They just, you know, give it.
You know, there's a dark side of this. I don't want to get too, you know, too off into this.
Well, who's going to pay for it?
I mean, it's more along the lines of limiting your exposure to things that you either don't care about or don't agree with or whatever.
One of the
problems with the internet and the availability of information is that, you know, maybe you're some kind of a fundamentalist, you know, whatever, you know, far, I don't want to say far right or left or whatever you are, you know, just a very severe kind of personality. I mean, you could only watch those shows and those newscasts and read those websites that you agree with.
Right.
And you never are confronted by this other stuff that's out there. And thus, will never change your mind about anything, because everything you read online or everything you consume in any way just verifies your pre-held convictions. You know, there's a danger to this kind of, it's almost like silos of beliefs and so forth. You know,
although I'm not convinced that didn't happen anyway. I mean, what are you saying? Well,
I think it just makes sense by
accident. You might see something that you disagree with, you know?
Right. Well, I mean, the more experience you have, however it is, if it's whether like traveling or being out in the world or whatever it is, reading things you don't agree with, whatever.
Let's face it. If you're watching a lot of TV, you're not.
But that's why it's a problem. I mean, if you're not actively seeking to better yourself, it just kind of, you know, comes in and it's the perception thing. You know, you just listen to whatever is in front of you.
Smart people will always do what I do, which is I subscribe to Twitter feeds of people I disagree with politically, strongly.
Sure.
I try to expose myself to the other points of view. I read blogs that I disagree with. I do a Windows podcast. What more do you want?
Unfortunately, my father, who I came up with, is a great guy and all that, but I mean, he's very different political beliefs than I have and so forth. And one of the things that was funny but sad in a way was, you know, he sends out all these kind of crazy, political things. I'm not going to get into which side he's on or whatever, but, you know, he sent out an Onion video to my wife, to his daughters, to other people. He didn't understand it was a joke.
Oh, dear.
Right, because his views in some ways are so radical that he actually thought it was real. Oh, he's a smart guy.
That's bad.
But yeah, it's a little tragic. You got to be careful, you know.
I have high hopes for the younger generation. I think that they are. I don't know if I have many hopes for our generation.
Yeah, we're lost.
It's too late for us. But I think the younger generation is in this new world where information flows all around, and you can lock yourself in a corner and only see stuff you agree with. I think in some ways there's more serendipity. What you're talking about is serendipity. And I think there's in some ways more serendipity now than there was before. But I agree that's something to be aware of. Absolutely one of the problems. And the other problem is it's like
saying TV is a vast wasteland. It is, but you know what? There's some good stuff there too.
Right.
So you can't damn the whole thing. Just, you know, I mean, you have to be smart about it.
Right. And the bigger issue maybe is how you pay for this and what business models emerge. But I'm confident. I was at an event with Kevin Kelly this past weekend, and he said something I think that was absolutely right on, which is money will flow where attention flows. So if people are paying attention to something, if they're consuming something, there will be a way to monetize it. There just will be. That's just how it works. And ultimately, people understand that if they don't pay for something, they're not going to get it in the long run. You know, you have to support what you like. I think people get that. I want to talk about the iPhone in just a bit. You may hear some surprising words come out of my mouth in a moment, but first.
Okay. Hopefully it's not. Screw you, Theron.
No, it will not. But first, I want to talk a little bit about our good friends at Astaro, our first sponsor on the TWiT network and still with us after all these years. And we're happy about that. They obviously love TWiT, and we love Astaro. Astaro makes a unified threat management device, a UTM. It's a security unit for your small business, or big business too, for that matter, used by businesses all over. When I see them at RSA, there is so much respect among the security community for Astaro because they do it right. They put the best of breed in both commercial and non-commercial security software in one easy-to-use, easy-to-set-up box that protects your whole enterprise. It not only gives you, of course, intrusion protection, a stateful packet inspection firewall with, you know, industrial-strength firewall, that gives you content filtering, control of what your users are doing, everything from instant messaging, peer-to-peer, but it protects them as well with three different antiviruses, two for email, one for the web. So all the vectors are protected. Automatic, free updates with the Astaro up-to-date. I mean, I can just go on and on. This thing is incredible. And add some features for convenience that aren't, strictly speaking, just for security. For instance, you have automatic encryption, decryption, and signing of email. Your users don't even have to know what's happening using standards like S/MIME and OpenPGP. Automatically encrypt and or sign emails through a central mail encryption server in the gateway before sending and receiving them. Inbound mail can automatically be decrypted. Plus, they use the traditional high-quality VPN technologies, IPsec, L2TP over IPsec, PPTP tunneling. But all of them can use SSL as well, making it very easy for you to set up a VPN. They have something they call active-active clustering that lets you scale up to 10 Astaro security gateways. So as you grow, so does your protection. I mean, this is just a great product. And if you're in the market, I want you to test it out for free. You can get a demo unit brought right to your business by calling them. 877-4-ASTARO. 877-4-ASTARO. I do want to mention to non-commercial home users that you can get the same kind of security. You can put it on your own beige box if you want. There's a very good VMware appliance that you can run on any PC. There's also, you can download it from Astaro.com as well. So there's a way for you to try it. And that includes all the features of the full big boy commercial Astaro security gateway. Try an ASG in your business. 877, the number 4, Astaro. Great to have them on board. Great to have them on Windows Weekly. I think that's fantastic. Astaro, ASTARO.com. So you didn't get an iPhone. You are an iPhone user. You didn't get an iPhone because you didn't want to get in line. You didn't like it. What was the deal?
No, I want to be very clear about this because I think the iPhone is great. And this was something that over time. Oh, no, I understand. But it's a platform that I think it was so exciting when it first came out and so ahead of the game in so many ways. I think a lot of people overlooked a lot of the issues in the beginning. Now, Apple's done a good job of improving it over time. So I would say right now, for most people, I mean, the iPhone is the phone to have, you know, when it comes to a smartphone. Obviously the iPhone, the reason I didn't get it is because, you know, Windows Phone is coming and I'm going to be a Windows Phone guy. And spending the amount of money I'd have to spend to upgrade now for something, it just doesn't make sense. So, you know, I'll be using Windows Phone going forward. And not the Kin, apparently, but some other Windows Phone. So,
which wasn't a Windows Phone.
It was a good decision. So,
yes. too bad.
So, yeah. No, I mean, this stuff about the iPhone 4, I'm still very excited about and would like to try. And I like the notion of having a phone that could be the camera and could actually be the camera, you know, and geotags your photos and all that stuff. And I'd love to have a high-quality phone that did all that stuff. The Kin does do that as well.
Oh, it does.
Geotech.
So it has GPS? Oh, I'm just going to love this.
The iPhone 4 has obviously had some issues. They've sold an unbelievable amount of them, of course.
I have one. I'm sitting right here in front of one.
Yeah. Did you finally get it activated, by the way?
It took me a long time. I think that was just because they were very busy. And also, I had done a funny thing in buying it. But yeah, I called them and AT&T was... They answered on the first ring. They were very helpful. This was on day one.
I've always found AT&T to be very helpful.
I was surprised. Actually. Yeah, no, they were very nice.
No, their customer service is great.
But I got to tell you, this antenna issue is real.
It's real, yeah.
And it's going to bite Apple in the ass.
Here's the thing, you know, Apple has always relied on doing things a certain way, and as it happened with Microsoft with the antitrust stuff, you know, when you and in this case I'm talking behavior, but you know, you can behave in a certain way when you're a small company, and when you become a huge dominant company, that stuff isn't really cute anymore. The secretive stuff that Apple does has always been kind of the key to its success in many ways. They rely on this event marketing. But one of the problems when you don't telegraph what's coming is that you don't necessarily test things effectively. And I've always said with Apple, and this goes to Mac OS X and the software that they make and also the devices, that you almost feel like that first version that comes out, that's when the beta test starts, you know, and that inevitably you're going to have some software update that will address the things that only come out when a huge number of people actually start using your product in the real world. And I think that, you know, the issue for Apple is that in the past, the majority of their customers were these Apple guys, you know, the Mac guys, the guys who just really love the company and advocate for the company and its products. They've always been really quiet about problems, you know, acting as if they didn't exist. And then when the new one comes out with all the new features, it's like, oh yeah, we should have had this all along, you know. Apple is not that company anymore. You know, their products now, by and large, hit a mass market. And a lot of those people aren't Apple guys, they're just customers. And for them, they don't understand and don't accept this kind of thing. And I think it's going to require some reworking on Apple's part about the way they do things, you know.
They're really stonewalling this. I mean, Jobs, I don't know if you saw the latest exchange in the Boy Genius report. And we should say, by the way, that there's no way of really validating that it's Steve Jobs.
Yeah, well, you can. I don't know. What did he say? I'm sorry.
Oh, my God. I mean, let me see if I can find it so I can quote it accurately.
Well, I mean, I love this first. It's kind of stunning. It's like when you go to the doctor and you say, it hurts when I do this. And he says, well, don't do that. You know,
that was his first response.
Yeah, his first response was, you know, I can't get any reception when I hold it this way, was don't hold it that way. And, oof, I mean.
And you know, I had this problem, and it drops to zero anyway, almost any way I hold it, and I lose calls. Yeah. I brought it into the AT&T store, and I said, I'm going to have to buy a case. I didn't want to. It's pretty. It's so beautiful. I didn't want to put it in a case. And the guy, even at the AT&T store, said, well, have you dropped calls? I said, well, I don't make many calls with it, so I don't know if it's dropping calls, but I can see it going to zero every time I hold it. I presume that's going to affect my reception.
Yeah. Well, no, there have been tests done where the thing literally loses network connectivity. So you try to browse the web or whatever, and it just doesn't work.
So this is
it's not just an icon, you know.
This is the exchange with a guy that Boy Genius Report is calling Tom. Mm-hmm. And he sent an email to an Apple engineer saying, when we spoke, you would not tell me that there is a fix for the phone, but I see that Apple has an internal troubleshooting procedure with no mention of a fix. We'd heard that maybe Monday there'd be a fix.
Right.
And this guy says, you know, I've lost all respect for Apple. I want to go back to Verizon and a nice Android phone. People are mocking me. This is the first time after 20 years of buying Macs. I'm ashamed to be a Mac fan. This is sickening. Steve Jobs replies. And says, okay. No, you're getting all worked up over a few days of rumors. Calm down. Then the reader sends a mail back to Steve. Now, I have no idea if this is real. Saying, I'm really insulted. Calm down. Rumors? What arrogance. This will be marked as the beginning of the end for Apple. Seriously, do the right thing. I just had dinner with three people who had iPhone 4s. We all can't make calls without dropping. This isn't a rumor. This is reality. Steve stays in the conversation. Steve responds. You're most likely in an area with very low signal strength. And it goes on. The guy screams. Steve says, you're working from bad data. Not your fault. Stay tuned. We're working on it. And then finally, without even an email, Steve just sends one more last thing saying, retire, relax, enjoy your family. It's just a phone. Not worth it.
Interesting.
I think there is a tone deafness at this point from Apple on this thing.
Well, but again, you know, it's funny, we just talked about this with regards to Microsoft. They've been so successful doing things a certain way. When you get pushback, you just don't know how to handle it. You know, it seems like for Apple, it's like we develop in secrecy. Jonathan Ive designs it, and then he makes one of those pukey videos where he waxes.
I make the phone like this is because I want form to follow.
It's not so much that I designed it. It designed itself for me.
It came to me in a flash.
And they just kind of repeat this thing. And everyone sort of swallows it, and they love them for it, and everyone gives them a standing ovation. But, you know, I think that, you're not creating things for the couple of million people. You're creating things for a very large mass audience now, and they expect things to be a little different. I mean, I think there's a happy middle ground between, you know, the feisty little Apple and, you know, the huge, staid, boring Microsoft. I mean, I think there can be, you have to evolve one way or the other, but... I don't think this is the downfall of Apple. I would point out that, you know, I had dinner with four guys and we all had iPhone 4s. You could end the story right at that sentence. They all had iPhone 4s.
Well, yeah, and I have one. I'm sitting in front of one. I'm carrying it around.
You know, whatever. I mean, they're selling millions of these things. So, We'll see. We'll see. I think there could be, if they don't respond to this adequately, I think there could be some problems. I don't think it's not the end of Apple, but I mean, you know, between the antenna issues, the yellowing on the screen, you know, most of the people who bought these things so far are existing customers.
Yeah.
There were a lot of existing customers, so it's not like that's a small number. So
it was
fine,
almost three-quarters of them, which is interesting. I think there's a lot of people. Well, first of all, we know Android, according to Google's installing 5 million new phones a month. So that's a lot. And I think some people are waiting for Windows Mobile. I think there's still a lot of BlackBerry users out there. The market is much more fragmented than Apple would like at this point. And there's competition, which is a great thing.
I think this is, you know, speaking to the fact that the near-term future of this market is a number of players, you know, some number. We don't know where it's going to fall out. But, you know, Apple doesn't have to dominate this market to be successful. They're not in first place now, and they're phenomenally successful. So whether or not Android passes them, whether, you know, RIM holds their own or whatever it is, I mean, it doesn't almost matter in a way. I mean, they have an incredible platform. This is a very specific hardware issue.
It did fix it when I put it in a case, which is so, I mean, it's not like, it's not that like tells the end of the world.
But that tells you how basic the testing for this should have been.
They should have
known. You've got to be kidding me.
And they should have fixed it. And they didn't know. That's why, for the first time ever, they have a case, a bumper case, which does one and only
on
one
the
thing.
The day it was available.
Yeah, it protects the antenna.
Never had anything. Yeah, that's true.
So they knew. They knew.
Okay.
I think they're underestimating the reaction of the market to this. And well, I think you're going to see in the next week.
In the past, they've never had.
They've had to do this.
I'm like the guy, you know, I review this Apple product. I'm like, hello, it doesn't do this. It doesn't do this. And people are like, why are you such a jerk?
Yeah, why do you hate Apple? You're a hater.
Why do you hate Apple so much?
Yeah.
And it's like, what are you talking about? I'm just pointing out things that it actually doesn't do. You know, do you have something to refute that with? Or are you just, you know, upset that I'm criticizing the company? I think that Apple has existed in this bubble for so long. They just don't, they've never had to respond to actual criticism. You know, they have their high-profile reviewers, none of whom mentioned any reception problems.
Isn't that interesting?
It's not that interesting. It's not a surprise at all.
You know, I mean, in my defense, the minute we got the phone, we tried it. We demonstrated on video. It was very clear that it was happening, and we did
the
it.
The minute
three or
you
four
got
times.
It was very clear.
Yeah.
You know what? Screw those other guys.
Yeah.
Because all they really are just mouthpieces for Apple. And that's exactly what I think.
It's pretty obvious.
You're telling me that the second you got this, it was obvious.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you know, I've used it now because the way I review a phone is to use it exclusively. I've used it exclusively for a week or whatever it is, 5 days. And I finally broke down. I had to get a case for the darn thing because the case solves it. So it's not the end of the world. But I do think Apple in the next week is going to have to.
This thing could have been a millimeter more thick and it would have fixed the problem. And they don't do it because they just love things to be as small and as thin and as light and as whatever as possible because they're all about those superlatives. And it's like they're willing to sacrifice network bandwidth to make it prettier. You know, it's something to be celebrated to a certain point, you know, but I mean, my God, I mean, what if you were one of those guys, like just a regular human being and you have avoided spending all this money on a smartphone, but the hype and the hype and the hype, and you're like, oh, I got to do this. I got to do this. And you get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and you wait in line like a little tool and you get your iPhone, you spend all that money on it. And you're telling me it doesn't make phone calls? I mean, what are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I mean, what do you say to someone like that? You know, anyway, all this said, I think they're going to fix it.
And it's, you know, in many ways, it's a great phone.
Apple has a history of, yep.
I love the camera. It's the best camera I've ever used in a phone. It's dramatic.
It's a great platform. I mean, you know, whatever the hardware, but. That iOS platform they have is fantastic. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff going on there. I don't mean this to turn into a...
No. We're not bashing it, but I do think it's surprising how poorly I think Apple has handled this. And I think they're going to have to deal with it. And it's, you know, every company makes mistakes. And to me, it's a measure of the company, how they handle that, how they make it good, how they respond to consumers. And denial, which is what Apple's doing right now, is not the way to handle it.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, when Google had this problem with Buzz or with the Google data capture, in the case of the data capture, they came forward with it. Before anybody else found it, they said, oh, we blew it. And in the case of Buzz, they reacted very quickly to a very legitimate company.
And you have to think they've learned their lesson, right? I mean, it's unlikely that Google will ever try to release something like Buzz the way they did Buzz.
Well, there's rumors now they're going to do a Facebook clone, which would be very interesting.
Oh, but they wouldn't. In other words, you don't wake up one day and it's part of Gmail.
Yeah, they learned, I would hope. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they learned their lesson, yeah.
Let's hope. And Apple, it's the first time they've had to learn this lesson, to be honest.
Well, it's the first time it's been this high profile. The truth is they've had a problem like this with other products. It's just that in the past, it wasn't the same audience. You know, I think that's the point here is that, you know, when you're phoning it in, so to speak, to your home audience, you don't have to worry about this stuff. But when it's just people, you know, my sister bought an iPhone. She's, you know, she doesn't buy technology. I mean, you know, she has a 3GS. I mean, actually, she bought it right before the iPhone 4 came out, and I actually kind of mocked her for that at the time. But, you know, maybe that was a good decision for her. Because I don't know how she would handle this. You know, it would be very frustrating.
Well, you get a case, I guess. Apple should just give those bumpers away is what they should do.
I think the reason they don't want to do that is that that's a concession.
Admission of guilt.
And then you become the Toyota, you know.
Right. Yeah, this is another example of a company that really mishandled it. And it hurts the company in the long run. Best thing to do, every crisis PR firm will tell you, and their firms are specialized in this, from the Exxon Valdez onward, is you make a clean breast of it as quickly as you can. You make it good, and you move on.
Honesty works wonders.
It's amazing. Let's get to our Windows 7 feature of the week. Paul's been highlighting features in Windows 7 that you might have heard about or may have read about or Paul probably talked about but had forgotten about. In this case, troubleshooting.
I'm so uninterested in talking about this right now. I'm all worked up about Apple. But
no, let's get back to Windows. You picked your beat, now lie in it.
Yeah, well. So, you know, Microsoft has included this new troubleshooting infrastructure in Windows 7. It's interesting to me, and it was one of those things I was a little nervous about with regards to, you know, how is this going to work in the future? Although, actually, there's some stuff in the Windows 8 documentation about this, and also about some of the hardware stuff we talked about a few weeks ago, like device stage, where they're looking at enhancing that stuff going forward. So it seems like this has some life left in it. But the troubleshooting infrastructure is really just a way for people, in a very plain English way, to find help for the problems that are very typical in Windows, you know, and it's funny, I actually use this tool, I don't want to say on a regular basis, but I would say about one third of the time we record this podcast, somehow in the middle of recording it, Aero Glass shuts off and I go back to Aero Basic. Right. It has something to do with Skype. It's Skype that does that.
Well, some applications will do that. I mean, I know they
And I think Skype, for me anyway, Skype is the one that does it. You know, I don't have any other applications where that happens. But with Skype, you know, I run Skype and you're kind of rolling the dice, you know. Now, the problem with that is if the troubleshooting infrastructure didn't exist, I would have to go through some bizarre steps to get Aero Glass back on because to the system at that time, Aero Glass is not a possibility. It makes some switch where it just thinks it's not available, you know, so I guess I could reboot the computer or whatever. But using the troubleshooting infrastructure, you can actually run one of the troubleshooters. And as it turns out, one of the number one troubleshooters, you know, one of the ones they list on that first page is Display Aero Desktop Effects, which is what turns the glass on. And if you run this, it will actually run through your system and look at it. And in my case, what it says is that the underlying technology that Aero Glass requires, the desktop window manager, isn't running. So do you want us to turn it on? You say yes, and Glass comes back, and that's how it works. And it's really nice. So if you have like a printer that's not working properly, your internet connection isn't working properly, Windows Update isn't working properly, things like that, they have these troubleshooters built in. They're very simple wizards. They're not 100%. I mean, nothing is, but they're very good at what they do, and they can be updated online. So one of the options in the troubleshooter is that you can get these things updated. They've also expanded this technology online. So if you've used Microsoft Fixit, this is a service on the Microsoft website where it can actually fix problems in your computers on your computer from the web. So PC makers can write their own troubleshooters. So if Lenovo or Dell or HP wanted to include troubleshooters that were specific to their systems, you know, my keyboard backlight isn't working or whatever it is, something that's very specific to that computer, that would be a possibility as well. Although to date, I haven't seen a lot of that stuff, but it is extensible, so those things can happen. So I will have a longer article or an article about a troubleshooter, a Windows troubleshooting on the web this week. And I'm actually flying home Friday, so it will probably be Saturday or Sunday, but it'll be sometime over the weekend. So there'll be more information, I guess, on the web soon.
More information to come. And yes. Now, our Windows 7 tip of the week.
So, I sort of promised myself that I would not talk about this TechNet thing ever again. But I still get a lot of email about the TechNet subscription stuff. I had a conversation with Ed Bott where he said that he was a little nervous about my stance that, you know, this thing was for non-commercial use, thus suggesting that people could use it and install it on all of the computers in their house and so forth. And that's not, I don't think I ever actually said that or wrote that, but in going over this conversation with him, it occurred to me that I should reiterate that it's for individual use only. It's for IT pros, essentially. You know, the notion here is that you get, you know, experience with Microsoft software that you know, just wouldn't be able to afford otherwise, but it gives you a chance to get experience with it, and it's something you could use to advance your career and so forth. But since talking about TechNet, I have gotten an amazing amount of emails from people who say, okay, I have TechNet.
But now?
Now. But what I have on my computer is Windows Home Premium, you know, Windows 7 Home Premium. What I'd like to do is upgrade it to Ultimate Edition, but I don't want to, you know, run the setup and upgrade because I'm afraid about doing that and, you know, it reboots and it does all this stuff. I could lose stuff, you know. And I don't want to wipe out my computer because, again, you have to be careful about backing everything up and what if I miss something and so forth. And the questions fall. This question I get falls into one of two categories, which is really interesting to me. And I mean, I've gotten over a dozen of these. One is there some way to electronically update just from one version to the other? Which, of course, there is. And two, maybe the person already knows about that feature called Windows Anytime Upgrade. Is it possible to use a key from TechNet to upgrade electronically in that fashion? So the tip of the week this week is about a feature we've actually already discussed in the context of a feature of the week, you know, some months ago. But there is a feature in Windows 7 called Windows Anytime Upgrade. And whether or not you have TechNet, you can use this feature to upgrade electronically. And oftentimes, almost always, it's the cheapest way to do so. So if you wanted to go from Windows 7 Home Premium, let's say, to Windows 7 Ultimate, there are different ways you could do it. You could buy the retail box. You could, you know, buy an OEM version, I guess, and just reinstall or whatever. But actually, the cheapest way to do it is to use Windows Anytime Upgrade because it's electronic. You pay Microsoft over the internet. The code to do this is already on your computer. It takes 10 to 15 minutes tops. It's not messy like a real upgrade. It's just, it's literally an in-place upgrade. It happens right on the fly. It's very quick. If you do have TechNet, yes, actually, as it turns out, those keys do work for this purpose. You don't have to go through that whole ugly upgrade process. So the tip, I guess, is that if you want to upgrade from one version of Windows 7 to another, there is a way to do it. It's called Windows Anytime Upgrade. And if you have a TechNet or, as it turns out, MSDN, which is a similar service at Microsoft for developers, the keys that those subscription services provide do work for Windows Anytime Upgrade. And this is absolutely the way to do it from a cost perspective, from a convenience perspective, and from a safety perspective if you're worried about losing your data. So that's definitely the way to go.
We are going to take a break, and we have a software pick of the week. Paul's going to have a drink.
Yep. You have to hydrate out here.
Hydrate in the Arapaho country.
Splitting headache for the first 2 days out there.
I am not good at altitude. In fact, I've told my wife now that we go to the beach for vacation. If you're bringing me, I go. Because she likes to ski. She likes Tahoe. She likes altitude. And I am not good at altitude. And I finally learned that.
I have been coming here for... is that even possible? Yeah, 25 years.
Wow.
And the altitude, you know, you always have that first couple of days. You know, you're sluggish, right. You go up the stairs, you're winded, that kind of thing.
Right.
You can get headaches. It's dry, you know.
You get used to it, I guess.
I just don't
like getting used to it.
I hate it.
I just don't like it. It's funny because, I mean, I have to go sometimes to places with altitude, but it's not my favorite thing. Maybe because I'm not a skier.
Yeah, it's beautiful here, but I just don't know.
It is pretty. But give me a beach anytime. That's my idea of fun. So we're going to talk, speaking of the beach, wherever you go for vacation. I know a lot of you are headed out for vacations right now. It's that time of the year. Best thing to do, bring with you a fine copy of an Audible book.
You know we love Audible. In fact, I'm sure, Paul, you listen to Audible books on your way out. Anybody's driving across the country is going to be listening to Audible. Audible.com/windows will get you a free audiobook just in time for your holiday. There are 75,000 titles. In fact, that's if there's one negative about Audible, it's hard to choose sometimes. It's one of the reasons when Audible listeners to get together, and I have a lot of friends who are major Audible fans as I am, one of the things we do is we talk about what's hot, what's good, what do you want to listen to, what have you just heard that's fantastic. And it gave me the idea that when we do these Audible ads, which we've been doing now for a couple of years, every single time I ask our hosts who are Audible fans, what's good, what's new, what are you listening to on audible.com.
I'm embarrassed by this one in a way because it's a little behind the times. I thought we had recommended this one before.
I have it, and I've been listening to it. I don't know if we've recommended it or not, but it's an absolutely great book.
I mean, I keep track of this, and I looked, and I didn't
never
see it.
Unless
I missed it. I could have sworn. I'm just surprised we haven't. So,
we're both very much into politics. And when I was a kid, I read the Making of a President series, Teddy White's kind of very famous series of books on how elections happened.
I've always enjoyed the Bob Woodward type stuff, you know, behind the scenes of whatever the president of the day is. I mean, those books have always been, you know, fascinating to me, or Veil, you know, the story of the CIA, whatever. Love that stuff. But yeah, so this is the story. This is Game Change, right?
Yep.
And this is the story of the 2008 now, right? I can't believe it was that long ago. 2008 presidential election. But the authors of the book had unbelievable access to the Obama, Clinton, and McCain campaigns.
They had such inside stuff that was just amazing.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the election was historic in many ways, but the, you know, the behind the scenes stuff, again, it's always fascinating. And this, I think, given the access that these guys had to the various, the big three candidates there, was fairly unprecedented. It's an amazing story.
If you like politics, if you like history, if you like scandal and gossip, in all of three respects, this is a book for you.
Sure.
Game Change, Obama and the Clintons, McCain and Palin, and the Race of a Lifetime.
Yeah, it's a bit behind. I'm sorry about that. I'm just surprised we hadn't talked about this
before. This came out in January. I mean, you're not that far behind. It took them a while to write it, right? Game Change. So here's how you get this free. Go to audible.com/windows, audible.com/windows, sign up for the gold account. That's going to give you a book a month, and your first one's free. You can cancel anytime. The book is yours to keep, so you're never on the hook for a book. I think they do this because they know there's no way you cancel. I couldn't live with that. I'm listening right now to Stieg Larsson's The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. It's coming to the end. It is gripping, and I sit in the car to hear more. It's just fantastic. If you're into politics, there's some great stuff here. If you're into sci-fi, if you're into history, if you're into fiction, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo is a murder mystery that is... I can't wait to... There's two more of them. I can't wait. It's just fantastic stuff. Audible.com/windows. Get your first book free. It won't be your last, I'm pretty sure. Audible.com/windows. We thank them so much for their support of Windows Weekly. And now, Paul, let's wrap things up.
All righty.
With your software of the week.
So, I've been experimenting lately with Internet Explorer 8 myself, which is kind of a weird thing to say, but I've always been, I think because of the slower development of Internet Explorer, I've tended toward the other browsers, you know, and for a long, long time, that was Firefox. And before, I mean, when Firefox wasn't even called Firefox, back when it was Phoenix, I was using that browser. And then Chrome came along, and I've always been very intrigued by Chrome. And I've basically sort of moved along to that. But you can look this up. I mean, wakupa.com/therot. You can see the software I use. And one of the things, it surprises me every time I see it, but I use IE a lot these days. And it's a lot of that has to do with the new Hotmail stuff that's coming out. And I've been using that. And, you know, using that in IE, and it works fine. But it's weird. The one browser that suffered from my standpoint has been Firefox. You know, I've used Chrome. I've even used Safari a lot. I mean, that's up there in the top 10 on my list. And it, Firefox just kind of fell by the wayside, you know. But they're working on a Firefox 4 release that's going to come out at the end of the year. And you can actually download a preview version of it now through their nightly build download site. And it's codenamed Minefield. I think they always use Minefield for the codename for the next version of Firefox, if I'm not mistaken.
Is that true? That's just to remind you that it's not going to be
It is
perfect.
Minefield, yeah. But I think the thing that's intriguing about this to me is that dating back to the previous version of Firefox, you know, they made some big promises about how this thing was going to look, and it was going to be very, at the time, Vista-specific, lots of glass and very pretty and Vista-esque and all that. And then they delivered this thing that was really ugly and just looked horrible. And as they were building up to Firefox 4, they started talking about the design again, and they came up with these mock-ups that were absolutely gorgeous. If they could, you know, if they would ever just do this thing, it would be the best-looking browser, I think, on Windows. Well, they're actually doing it. So if you download one of these nightly builds, you can see this thing and use it. And it is, it's a gorgeous browser. And it's, you know, there's some things in it I can't quite figure out. I can't get Flash to work. I mean, it says it installs, but then it doesn't work or whatever. But it's clean, and it's a lot like Chrome in some ways. You know, the tabs can be at the top. It's a lot of glass. There's a toolbar without any menu bar and all that stuff. But it just has a really nice design, and it looks so exactly like that mock-up that I got so excited about months ago. It's definitely worth checking out. You can you know, you can run it side by side with your other browsers or whatever. But
so it has has the UI now, because for a while I think it didn't have the
It just had the old UI at first, but right. Starting I don't know, within the past week, it has picked up that new UI.
I stopped using Firefox. I use Chrome exclusively now because I just love it so much.
And it's right, and it's not that there's anything wrong with Firefox. You know, I can't point to the browser and say, well, I don't use it because of this. It's right. Not that. I use this other thing for other reasons. You know, it's not that there's some deficit or, you know, problem in Firefox. It's just that, you know, I don't know. We've moved on to the next thing. I don't know. But, you know, this could make me a reverse convert. I'm not sure what the term is, but it's nice. It looks like a nice browser, so. I'm going to play with it for the next week or so. I've you know, like you were talking with the phone, I have set it as my default browser, and I'm making sure I use it with as much as I can just to see, you know, how it works. And so far, so good. It looks great. But you can find that at it's nightly.mozilla.org, and that's where you can get the...
Yeah, the nightly builds.
Yeah.
For testing purposes only.
Yeah. Now, I don't know on the Mac. I'd be curious to see...
If it has a Mac issue,
if the design is similar, I mean, you know, the toolbar stuff, I think they, you know, they could easily do, but I don't know how they would, you know, handle the top.
Let me download it and see. If it has a ribbon, then I'll know.
Well, it's not a ribbon. I mean, you know, their initial design ideas for the Vista version back a few years ago were very pretty, and they looked like those Vista media applications, because Vista had different colored toolbars for different types of applications, which I thought was actually kind of a neat idea. And it looked great. It just looked like a great browser. And then, you know, the thing they came out with looked like, you know, it looked terrible.
I'm opening up the Mac version right now. And while I do that, let me say a thank you to Paul Thurrott. Paul is the editor-in-chief of the incredible, very useful site, super site for Windows, winsupersite.com. He is on.
Well, thank you, sir.
I love the icon of my Minefield. Is it a bomb on Windows as well?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, at least they're telling you.
Well, they're being honest.
They're being honest. It's a minefield. Let me open it up and see what it looks like. He's also the news editor for Windows IT Pro, and his book Windows 7 Secrets is on shelves now. Windows Phone Secrets is coming soon. You know, it doesn't look anything particular. It just is, looks like.
Yeah, so it just adopts the Windows style, it looks like. So they have the toolbar.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's too bad. Yeah. So there's, for whatever reason, you know, on Windows, they, you know, it picks up the glass and all that. And it just looks really nice.
Yeah, this just looks like Mozilla. Nothing special.
Okay. Well, that's too bad.
On the Mac. Try it on Windows.
I think, for whatever reason, I think the UI they had for the previous version looked okay on the Mac, but on
it's
Windows,
skinnable, right? So I mean, you're not stuck with anything.
No. It's not just, but it's the Chrome aspect of it. It's the you know, the under or the you know, the outside borders of the Windows and the glass that they use. No, I think it's nicely done.
Right. Thank you, Paul Thurrott. Enjoy Durango.
Sir.
Will you be back in town next week?
Yeah, I'm flying home tomorrow. So. Right.
Oh, you're not going to drive home, huh?
No, I think I've done enough driving for a little while. I'm going to stick away from the car.
Paul Theroux, thank you so much. We'll see you next week on Windows Weekly.